Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. JD, Bunkus, and Ailish Forfar. Download the podcast, subscribe. We got a great guest. Just waiting for him to get on the phone here. We got Brandon Bean, Buffalo Bills general manager. I don't like that you put that in my head, JD. I've been thinking about it all break.
No, yeah, it's just, listen, it's just a, it's a different thing when you have expectations, and it is a absolute thing, right? It's a huge story with the Bills this year. I can't wait to see how they play. Mm-hmm. I think that they're going to be unquestionably, like, I don't know if they're the most interesting team in football this year, but they're one of them. Mm-hmm. They've got a compelling quarterback. They lost their OC, but to be honest, it doesn't look like they're missing a beat. Mm-hmm. Their defensive line looks completely, I don't know, just loaded now. I think the defense looks like it's going to be better than it was a year ago. There's optimism about Trey White. Depending on, you know, they're reluctant to make proclamations on him, but overall, it doesn't seem like he's going to maybe even miss as much time as some people had hoped, or some people had feared. I shouldn't say some people had hoped. I mean, some people did hope, I guess, maybe some like Patriots fans, but yeah, they're the class of the division. That was the kind of thing, is that it was like so many years of just the Patriots in this division, Patriots, 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 Patriots. And now it's New England with the dysfunction and mm-hmm. Buffalo with all the vibes. Everybody else is the dysfunctional organization. And it's a testament to, you know, what Brandon Bean has done here in his 5 years, is turning around a team that had the longest drought in football, that was perennially, I don't think even a laughingstock. They were just irrelevant to arguably the best team in the NFL this year, the odds-on favorites. They've done just about everything right during his tenure to turn this team around. They've built a different culture. They've developed a franchise quarterback who not only, you know, is performing, but, you know, really wanted to be a Buffalo Bill. One of the more exciting players in the game. Like, the things that you nitpick with this team right now is, like, they're so talented that they changed rules.
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah, so, again, expectations can be difficult, as we've mm-hmm. seen with the season, because when you don't meet expectations, I think it can have a compounding effect, is that you start to get down on yourself a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's great in a, especially even in football, right? To be, I think Bill Simmons calls it the nobody believes in us team, right? That has a real impact. It's why the Philadelphia Eagles, when they went to the Super Bowl, wore the dog masks. It's why New England, you know, Tom Brady kept trying to find slights. It's why LeBron continues to try to find slights. MJ, all the greats do it. They still try to kind of keep themselves grounded in, people don't believe in me, even though, yeah, they all do. Because that's a nice mentality to have. It's not always the easiest from, you know, the driver's seat like the Bills are currently in. So, yeah, it's a very, very different mood around this team. It's incredible how rapidly we've just put this group into, yeah, the top tier of the NFL. And, yes, I really do believe that they are the most exciting team in football this year to keep an eye on. Let's talk to the man that built this team. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Bill's general manager, Brandon Bean. Good morning. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning. Appreciate you guys having me on.
So let's start with some smaller things. One is just, you know, you said back in July, you've been in contact with a few free agents working their way back from injuries, but you weren't looking at a specific position. Has that changed for you over the last month?
Not really. I mean, we keep in regular contact with guys. We, you know, our pro scouts, they all are responsible for different teams, and they track players. And so ultimately, you know, when I made that comment, it wasn't about a player or a position. It was just there are still guys out there. They were talking about free agents and in general. And I said, no, there's still guys out there that aren't just bottom of the barrel, that guys that have played and have skins on the wall, they're just still working their way back. And you never know. Those are potential adds in camp if they're ready, or later in the season if they're ready then.
What about somebody with not bottom of the barrel that has a good track record that's been kind of linked with the organization, Odell Beckham Jr.? Is that something that we might see on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, he's a heck of a player and all that, and I know he had some bad luck to be playing so well in that Super Bowl and to tear his ACL mm-hmm. like that. But OBJ is a heck of a player, and, you know, I think he's still currently rehabbing, is my understanding. I don't think he's set to come back, in the next few weeks or anything. I'm not sure exactly where it's at, but, you know, we would definitely, you know, look at all options and him being one of them for sure.
Does it comfort you at all when you see things like, you know, Kevin Durant is the GM of his team and LeBron gets to be the GM essentially of his team, and those two things, you know, they crater? No, whenever guys knock on your office door right now pitching you ideas, that you kind of have that as ammunition back?
Yeah, I mean, like, our guys are competitive. We got a lot of guys, whether it's Josh, whether it's Vaughn, whether it's Steph, all those guys, they're competitive. They want to win. And so when they see good players, I mean, players know players. And of course, in that relationship, the OBJ, when obviously Vaughn and him have had a relationship even before they were teammates, you know, last season at the Rams. So, no, I get it. Familiarity, you know, guys want, they know guys that can help. They want to recruit them. And so I would be foolish not to listen to those guys and their thoughts on them. But ultimately, each one, you have to consider where your team's at the time and, how your team's playing, and do you have a need? And if you do, you take a look.
So the theme of our show today has been expectations. We have a baseball team here that had really high expectations, and it's been a tough year for them. They're just kind of sitting in the last wild card spot, and they're clinging on. And I'm curious with your team, because you've gone from these lovable underdogs to a team that was on the rise, has had some surprises, and now you're just the clear class of the division, favorites potentially by a lot of people's estimation to come out of the AFC. How do you think your guys are handling being that team now?
Yeah, I mean, it is different. You know, it's one thing when you've been at the back of the pack and you're kind of sneaking up on people. I think, you know, the last couple of years we've had to flip that ever since we made the AFC Championship game a couple of years ago. And so it is a different mentality. And I think we got showed last year, middle of the season, we kind of went through a little stretch of we won a game, we lost a game, we won a game, and we lost, you know, the teams that, you know, I thought we were the better team, but they were the better team that day. And if you don't show up, you know, we all know if you don't show up and play your best, you got a good chance to lose. And so hopefully that was learning for us, because, you know, if there's a, you know, you win one or two of those games, you know, then we're hosting games, you know, instead of having to travel, you know, for the postseason like we had to last year and the previous season. So we'll have to be on our A game every week. We know that, you know, people are aware of us. We're not sneaking up on anyone, and that's part of the challenge.
So expectations on the team as a whole, but certainly a lot of individual expectations on Josh Allen. What have you seen differently this postseason to hopefully put him in that picture that he's even better than last year?
Yeah, I mean, Josh is just he's always working. He's never going, I've arrived, or you're never going to hear Josh say, I got it figured out. You know, he's very self-aware, and, you know, we do assessments at the end of every season, you know, with every player, not just Josh. And some guys, you talk to them and you say things, and it's almost like they're not aware of what things they still need to get better at. But Josh, you know, you hardly have to say much. He'll get out in front of it right away when we sit down and talk at the end of the season. And so he just constantly trying to get better, and he wants feedback. And, you know, he's humble. He's not going to walk around and say, oh, look at what I did in the postseason last year or the year before, you know, leading us to the AFC Championship game. He's dialed in, he's competitive, and, you know, he's got that chip on his shoulder that, you know, we still have a lot of things we need to accomplish here, you know, as a team, and then him personally.
Yeah, it probably feels pretty good when the quarterback is one of your biggest areas of comfort. So other than remaining healthy, right, because that's what just everybody wants to get through the preseason. Hey, camp, healthy, healthy, healthy. What do you think is most important thing for your team during the preseason? What do you care about the most?
Well, I mean, normally you want to try to find a rhythm on each side of the ball, and it's not as easy to do because preseason has changed and evolved, you know, because, we're now at 17 games and preseason's down, and you're trying to evaluate your back-end guys to see who the best 53 are. But you also don't want to walk into the season trying to find your rhythm for 3 or 4 weeks, and next thing you know, you start the year 1-3. So it's that fine balance of finding that rhythm yet staying healthy. And, you know, offensively this year we have a new offensive coordinator in Ken Dorsey, so making sure that he and Josh are putting different scenarios leading the offense, you know, as many things that Sean can do, he's trying to do so that when they get to game day, nothing will be foreign for him.
And how do you think that is right now?
I think they're doing really well. I mean, you know, Josh didn't play week one. You know, we'll see, you know, about this week or next week. But, you know, just, you know, until they actually are on the field in the game, we've done a lot of stuff in practice, you know, offense versus defense. We did a scrimmage last week to where it was game-like conditions, you know, with the one since we didn't play them. So I think so far very well, but ultimately, you can't simulate an actual game. You can try, but ultimately it'll have to, you know, wait till they actually get on the field.
So your position is one that's really curious now too, because like we're talking about expectations, and you built this team, and when you're now 5 years on the job, and the team has had this incredible rise to now the top of the AFC. Where would you say you've grown the most in your role over your tenure?
I think just being open minded and trying to listen and learn. I mean, we got a lot of good people here, and. You know, when you come from a place, you know, I grew up in this league in one organization, and a couple different regimes ran them. So I saw things that I liked from each ones. But so you always come in with, you know, your plan of how you want to do things. But, you know, I think, you know, when I got here, we had a whole new personnel staff to hire. They had fired all the college and pro scouts, and, you know, just also getting the history of the Bills and why, you know, there were some people here. You know, we got Jim Overdorf, who's been here 35 years, you know, as the contract guy. And so just asking Jim, like, his thoughts on why they were failing for 17 years. I mean, I kind of had, you know, my ideas, but just, you know, constantly being open-minded, listening, learning, try to learn from people's failures as much as their success. And you got to evolve. And, you know, whether it's player performance, sports science, you know, all those things. Everyone thinks of GM as this guy that's playing fantasy football, picking players. But, you know, surrounding yourself with people that are good at what they do and are team first is probably as important as helping find these players.
I can't believe that your job is more complicated than what I do on my waiver wire in fantasy football. I refuse to believe this. I don't know if you know this, I'm a commissioner in my fantasy football league, so I'm not a dual role person. You know, I do your job and somebody else's. You know, that's interesting what you said about looking back on the history of the Bills, because I think that with organizations a lot of time that have had a history of failure, and I think that that's, you know, a fair way of putting it, but it's like, yeah, when it's had a really tough time getting over the hump and you have a long playoff drought like the Bills did, and year over year a lack of success in the winning column or in the playoffs, usually regimes come in and at least outwardly the messaging to fans and to media is usually something like, the past is the past, this team doesn't have anything to account for when it comes to, you know, the organization moving forward. But it sounds like from your answer that, yeah, you really did take into account some of the things from the past that weren't working. And yeah, I'm kind of curious what maybe some of those things or one of those things was.
Well, I mean, without getting into specifics, it's more just what are the commonalities? I mean, you can look real quick. You know, I think a lot of the teams in the AFC East did the Patriots a favor. You know, the Patriots were really good. You got probably the greatest coach of all time and the greatest quarterback. What a pairing, the two most important things, you know, when you're building an organization. And, you know, constantly, if you look, the teams in the AFC East were turning over, you know, regimes, whether it was the head coach and the GM or one or the other. And just, it's hard to build something to sustain to last if you're, because what happens is you get different regimes. They want to do things different. I'm running a 4-3. You're running a 3-4. I want to be a run-heavy team. This next regime wants to throw the ball, you know, 75% of the time. So it's just, you're constantly changing personnel, and you never stick to who you are. You know, I think that was probably the biggest thing that, you know, I think was easy. But there's a lot of, you know, from how you staff, how people do things, how you lead, how you let your people do their jobs. And I think there's a lot of layers, you know, to an organization. And I would say if you went to another organization that had similar failures for, you know, 17 plus years, you'd find some common things, but you'd probably find some different things as well. So it was about knocking those out. And then what are the things that just pertain to the Buffalo Bills that are, you know, making them fail year after year? And so asking a lot of questions and just listening and learning is probably the best thing I could do when I got here. And again, we didn't, Sean and I didn't come in here and, you know, try and fire a bunch of people. The personnel staff, like I said, was removed before I got here. But we just tried to listen, learn, and tell people what our vision was. And then if they wanted to be a part of it and they were good at their job, you know, they would remain here. And I think, you know, that's a different approach. Some approaches are just come wipe it out. You know, you've been here, you've been around losing. But there are a lot of times in organizations that have had, you know, failures like the Bills had, there's still a lot of good people. They just, you know, you just need, you know, the right leadership at the top.
Well, I know you had Sabres GM Kevin Adams. He came to camp. And I always love when it's, you know, cross-sport general managers or cross-sport coaches get together and try to learn from one another. And from, you know, getting to talk to you right now, it seems like that's what you are. You're very much a guy that is a listen-and-learn person. But, yeah, that's an organization that's trying to take a step and wants to be where you guys are at, which is, hey, get rid of some of the past and move forward into a more positive future. What do you look for when you get opportunities to spend time with GMs from other sports? Like, again, you're a listen-and-learn guy, so I'm guessing that there's something. It's just from the outside, those things are usually kind of hard to connect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you ask questions, again, what, how are they built? How do they do things? How, what's your scouting process? What do you, how do you conduct your meetings? You know, I've had Kevin come over here and sit in our draft meetings. You know, he's been here on draft day and you know, ask how he does it and or what their process is. And then just how you build your staff. We've talked about, you know, injuries with players and how, you know, monitoring guys and ramping them up the right way, how we do it versus, you know, how they do it. And so just trying to share ideas, you know, even though they're different sports, you'll find a lot of things do cross, you know, crossover contracts, you know, how agents do certain things in hockey versus how, you know, football agents do things. And some of the obstacles, and maybe there's some common obstacles, and you know how I've dealt with them can help him, or vice versa, how he's situations he's run into, and you know he and their coach, you know, Don Granato, have done a really good job to get this going. They're, you know, kind of reminds me of when Sean and I got here, and you're flipping that roster over. They're getting some youth in there, and they're trying to find some vets. So I think Kevin's doing a heck of a job, and I think the Sabres have a, you know, a bright future.
We're talking to Brandon Bean, Buffalo Bills general manager. One more before we let you go, Brandon. One thing from the outside looking in that seems, you know, ever present with the Bills since you took over over these years is the type of team dynamic and the development you put on, the type of pride that this team has as a unit, as a team. Is that something you spend a lot of time focusing on? And how much of an advantage do you think that your team has over others with the way that they kind of mesh together?
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, you know, we all can look at tape and watch these guys play live and decipher who talented players are. But I think building a talented team and a really good team that can deal with adversity, I think you get, it comes back to character and team first attitude and guys that want to be part of the community. Our guys embrace the Bills Mafia. They embrace this town, this city, you know, the blue collarness of Buffalo. And, you know, I look back to even this May, you know, the mass shooting down at the Tops. You know, our guys, you know, they wanted to rally behind this city and get down there and not just write a check. And that was from our players. You know, we just kind of listened and opened and we had our ideas, but we followed their ideas and they wanted to go down there and be a part of that. And, you know, they love this community, they love the fan base. And I don't think you're going to find that in every city where a group of players feel so connected to their fans. And so that's important, you know, as Sean and I build the team, that it's not just a team that's a good team that happens to reside in Buffalo, but we want to be a part, you know, a fabric of the community.
I really appreciate you joining us this morning, Brandon. We're looking forward to seeing how the Bills rise to the pressure, as we were putting it, and the expectations this year.
Awesome. Great to be with you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks so much. Brandon Bean, Buffalo Bills general manager, and our insider that was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
See, to me, that now that he's off the line, because you never want to sound like you're kind of kissing ass, but that to me is like a real good example of what top-end leaders do.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is a real commonality across organizations is that you obviously have to have strength in your convictions, that there is a way of doing things, but also that those things are flexible and that there are people who are going to have more understanding in their direct areas of purview that you need to be able to lean on, trust, and empower. And by the sounds of things, getting to talk to Brandon Bean, that's what the Bills have been able to do well. That the usual way at getting better at things is by listening and learning and backing those things with, yeah, your own belief system and your own talents as a leader. But that so much of leading isn't you, it's the people that are around you. And building up that foundation that is, you know, I don't want to say underneath because that sounds weird, but like, yeah, structurally within the organization underneath you. But you do build from the ground up, not really the top down. So, yeah, if I'm a Bills fan, I'm encouraged by kind of their mindset heading into camp. That culture that team has instilled, the fact that, yeah, they are 5 years into this regime, that they do have a lot of things that now are now in place. They look like a team that's positioned to take that next step. That's the thing. This is the hardest one to make. You can be the team that turns it around. A lot of teams turn it around. A lot of teams go from being last in the division, like what? The NFC South for years, it was basically, you know, a decade, maybe even more, of the team that finished last won the division. It was wild, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have that. Not that uncommon, especially in a sport like football. But taking that next step, closing that end of the loop to become champions, I think that you need to be able to maximize every possible thing at your disposal, and it really does seem like the Bills are doing that. And yes, I asked that question about linking the past to the present and the future because the Toronto Maple Leafs, that's sort of their thing. You know, take down the pictures in the hallways so that we can move on. The Leafs are not responsible for the ghosts of the past. No, you should be using your past failures and applying them to the future. And you should be doing a deep introspection as to why your organization has not been able to take a step forward. Maybe partly that's why the Bills are where they are, is they were able to do that.
I've always been drawn to a team that I believe has a good, I know I use vibes, but a good basis of leadership, and they put that emphasis on team dynamic, because I've played for those teams and I think it makes a huge difference when you're trying to take that next step. Like any type of advantage you might have on another team with going through tougher times, like the Bills not being able to close the gap, I think that adds a lot of characteristics that some other teams don't have. And I think their leadership by Josh Allen is clearly something that is an advantage in terms of being able to rely on them this year to take that step. I've always felt that with the Bills. I really like the culture. I think it starts from the top, as Brandon was saying. I think it runs through. They have added Von Miller, who I think brings a lot of that experience as well. You've already seen from camp, like, so many conversations coming out about what he's been doing in terms of leadership and helping the young players. And once you get young players to buy into that culture and that team mentality, I think it can make a very significant difference. So I was really encouraged to hear all that from Brandon. And I don't care about your Toronto curse, because I don't believe it has anything to do with these Buffalo Bills. And we will prove it to you this season. Let's get into the wake and rake after this. A tough one. We're gonna flush it down. Last night's wake and rake, abysmal, unfortunately. Just, you know, we gotta turn around, and we can. That's the wake and rake next, brought to you by Unibet.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
It is the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. I backed the Toronto Blue Jays last night. I missed. But if you found a book that had the number of JD hot dogs, I gave you the inside scoop. I told you four. It was four. I dunked the dogs and beer.
Match fixing.
Okay, credit for that.
Match fixing.
yes. Yeah. It was tough. So whoever bet the over is furious, you know, because I could have gone over. I was closer to the over than the under. I dipped the beers or the hot dog and draft beer, though.
How is it possible to be closer to the over than the under? You had four hot dogs, and the over-under was set at 4.5, wasn't it?
Because you were right. When I had two dogs, I was still starving. He's only had two hot dogs. Yeah. He's starving.
Yeah, you said you were going to have
still
two,
so
and I
hungry.
Said, there's not a chance, Jamie. Yeah. Like, they're pretty small, are they not?
Yeah, they're small. It was not about the amount of food. It wasn't that I ate two miniature hot dogs and went, I am stuffed. It was, hey, these are kind of cold and boiled, slimy hot dogs. They weren't exactly, you're right, Ailish. I did need like a little bit of a grill mark. They're just kind of depressing to look at.
Yes,
you get at them and you go, oh, it's okay. It is hilarious because, Blake, I mentioned this at the top of the show, but that, like, so in the corners of the outfield and the 100 levels, those seats never, ever fill out. They are a dead zone. It's why I've always advocated that they put a beer gardens down there, right? And that they blow out those seats and just have it be another common hangout area. Looney Dog Night, packed. Looney Dog Night, packed to the wall. People, it's just like this city, they tell you, hey, we'll give you cheap meat at the baseball game. People go, yeah, absolutely. I missed two whole innings standing in line for those cheap hot dogs. Here's my thing. I actually just like to go to the baseball game for baseball, and I actually would have just paid, I think it's $5 or $6 for a sausage outside. I'm more satisfied with the $5, $6 sausage and the two waters I grab before the game than I am the four hot dogs for the savings of $2 inside the stadium minus two innings of baseball. That's my position on Looney Dogs.
I think Looney Dog Tuesdays have single-handedly funded the $300 million renovations at the Rogers Center. Last night, again, setting a new record.
Without question.
Here's the scam. And
yeah.
I know there are limits on how many hot dogs you can buy, but I do feel like with a press pass, there is a Looney Dog Tuesday.
Eight at once.
Now, the Jays have to get through the wild card series for this to happen, but a playoff Looney Dog Tuesday, I am buying as many as I can carry and selling them for a toonie just off to the side. I'm going to be rich. JD, I believe you.
Honestly, that's brilliant.
That's actually
brilliant. I did see guys. I said that's brilliant. Yeah, sorry. Maybe I'm just delayed. I'll reconnect. But I was going to say that's brilliant. I did see guys leaving the game with multiple hot dogs.
No.
With like a ton of hot dogs leaving in a basket, and I went, guys, you can get more hot dogs. You can make them at home. Why are you leaving with the hot dogs? They're still priced more than a regular hot dog. What are we doing here? It was a little wild.
Here's a text from Stefan and Barry, or Steven. You can never know with those ones. This is shameful, but I do intermittent fasting. So the last time I went to Looney Dog Night, I had 8 down before the first pitch. The guy next to me was legitimately wondering about my well-being.
All right. So I just looked up the most recent flyer from a certain grocery store, and you can get 450 grams. How many dogs is that?
That appears
to be 12 dogs for $3.99.
12 packs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
If you are going to the Jays game to get your groceries cheap, you could just go to the grocery store,
man. Well, you have to add buns to that and condiments. It adds up. Buns, how much is a bag of buns? Probably,
I don't know,
at least $4.
$2?
No way.
$4 for those cheap buns?
The nice buns or the grimy buns?
We're talking about cheap. We're talking about the people who are
look up the flyer,
going
Blake.
To the Blue Jays game for groceries.
Hot dog buns.
You're looking at like $4.
See, I said four bucks.
You could get a package of $3.09, but here's the scam with Big Hot Dog. The bun packages are never in the same quantity as the hot dog packages.
Yeah.
So you either got to double wiener it.
They know.
Yeah, or you got to buy like 2 things of wieners, 3 things of buns, so it evens out. Yeah. It's a big scam.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a Big Hot Dog knows what they're doing. All right. Yeah. Like they know what they're doing. Yeah, it was – I got to tell you, though, people were freaking out in my Instagram DMs about me dipping the dog in beer. People were really not having it. Everyone was – there was a lot of people that were actually, like, angry at me for this. It's got a lot of no, it's disgusting. That was the best part of the Looney Dog Night. That actually tasted the best. That was better than the condiments, and beer dip is better than ketchup, which I tried. Ketchup on a hot dog, it doesn't do it for me. It doesn't move me any way. Ketchup is just not good. Like, I don't know what to say. Ketchup is just not good.
I have a couple DMs to read you from my story that I posted of you.
Sure.
Okay. Absolutely brutal. What a disgrace. Mm-hmm. Weak. 100% he's worried about his summer bod. Here you go with the mustard ketchup debate. He's right. For once, he's right. He's spot on with this take.
For once, he's right. I love
Here's
that.
One. Ketchup is the best on hot dogs. Only mustard, I can agree with that, and some diced onions. So
well,
I mean,
yeah,
there's
I would
so
have
many.
Loved
more.
Some diced onions. I didn't have diced onions.
Yeah,
they
got rid of all that after the pandemic because you can't use.
That's
the
an extra.
Spoons.
That's an extra dime or an extra quarter.
Yeah,
you gotta,
exactly.
You gotta put those
no.
on.
No. Them come in those little foil wrappers, and you open it up, and you're like, all right. Yes, this is appropriately priced. This is more than a dollar on. There's nights where this is more than a dollar.
Like, please also, take away his man card.
Yeah, the man card thing is, yeah, what, you know, congrats. You're still, what year do you think this is?
A woman can't smash some hot dogs? What, we're
Ailish
in 2022
ate
here.
Ailish ate more hot dogs.
Yeah, because I'm an athlete.
Oof. Yeah.
My hero is Joey Chestnut, of course. Put some respect. Yeah.
If your hero was Joey Chestnut, you would have dipped. You would have dipped your dog like I did. I dipped my dog like a true legend, like a true hero. And you know what? It was good. And it was delicious Bud Light that did the dipping. It's the best sauce that you could ever. Honestly, just Bud Light. Make a sauce. Like, just make
that's
a sauce.
An interesting
where
idea.
Things taste like Bud Light and that you put it on a steak. That's delicious. Let's do that. $1 million idea. $1 billion idea. Even. So Wake and Rake has a rough night. We have so many things to settle today, okay? So Looney Dogs, they've been sighted. Looney, the mascot, is cute, though, Ailish. I agree with you.
I love Looney. Did you get a photo with Looney, or did you see him?
No. No, I'm a 35-year-old man.
I don't care.
I can't. Yeah, I'm not stopping Looney for a photo. I just can't do it. It can't be done. What do we want to start with here first? Wrestling?
The wrestling one.
Ticket?
We got to resolve
or
that.
Umpire?
Wrestling.
Okay. So Blake and I, really wanted to go. I told Blake the other day, I invited him to come to wrestling with me. I said, hey, my brother's in town. He's never been to WWE. I've said a billion times over that going to a WWE live event is as good as it gets from a fan experience. It is so fun. If you embrace it and you enjoy it for what it is, you're going to have a blast. There's incredible chants. There's just, you know, camaraderie amongst the fans, tons of great t-shirts, just, you know, great music.
Stuff that delays it on TV, the like, oh no, here's a long entrance and slows down the momentum on TV, is
awesome
way better live, obviously.
Yeah, way better live. I saw an NXT event God, this has to be like 6 years ago, and it was with Shinsuke Nakamura. He came in,
nice.
And they had
the
violins
big
play
violin
him.
Entrance. Yeah,
it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Like, it was badass. And then there was another guy. I think his name was Bobby Roode.
Bobby Roode.
What's
the
his game?
Piano. The Glorious Piano.
Glorious. That's it. Yes. Glorious. And they played at the Nashville Predators games. That's why whenever I'm watching Preds and I hear it, I go, yes, because that was amazing too. They had like a choir that sang it. It was out of this world good. So if you can get that kind of production value heading down to Monday Night Raw, it's just, it's a hell of a time. And my brother and I are obviously the types that will embrace such a thing. And I'm very excited to see wrestling with him. But Blake asked for us to get tickets and we went, okay, you know, we're going to go as a group. A thruple, you know? We're the three of us.
JD's two brothers.
Yes, exactly. So we're like, the three of us will go down to the game. Blake says, do you want me to ask for tickets? I've got a, you know, I'm going to ask a person that I know. We end up getting the work tickets, but the work tickets, there are only two of them. There are only two. Blake is an extremely nice guy. He says, hey, you and your brother take them. We'll figure something out. Is the figuring out that my brother and I just have to buy Blake's ticket? Because here's the thing. The tickets are good. The tickets are in the 100 sections. They're like row 5. I don't know what they are, but if I had to guess, they're probably pretty decent. So what is the protocol here for what we have to do for Blake? Because I think we have to buy them a ticket, but it'll be tough to get them to sit with us. What do we do? Blake, before you, Ailish, you got to weigh in first.
I think you should consider the fact that Blake's best friend, Edge, is probably going to get him backstage passes, right? They are BFFFFF. And look at Blake's little face. He's excited. He knows that that's in the running. So yeah. I think you need to consider the fact that whatever you get him is not going to be as good as custom communication and access from his
best friend. Here's what I did think. I did think this. How hard would it be for Blake to get a press pass and then just sit in those
seats
or like around us and just be with us in the like? Will
he's probably involved in it?
Out?
He's honestly probably like one of those like jobbers or whatever they do. They come in and they have like
If Kevin Owens gets hurt, Blake steps
right?
in. That's very clear.
That's
it's
it.
Like
no,
Kevin Owens tears his ACL.
Do, here's the thing that if you've watched the history of wrestling, you know when there are twins or siblings, they'll do the thing where like, it's one-on-one, so Kevin Owens is fighting whoever. Drew McIntyre, we'll say, since he's on Kim and Friends later this week.
Cool.
And Kevin Owens gets hurt and needs a breather. He rolls out of the ring, and then I roll out from under the ring, replace him, and it's just like,
I like that.
You just get him a fresh shift, you know?
Yeah, I like
so
that.
So you can't
I
top like that, JD. Don't even bother.
Now, my actual answer, and I don't know where your section is, so we got to look at the tickets.
They're good. I think it's 107.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a good spot. So right now the tickets are like $300. Mm-hmm. So at that
You're
price,
not
I
paying
would,
for that.
Yeah, at that price, I would say none of us are paying for it in general. My thought was just that what makes the most sense is there's three of us going. We got two tickets. Whatever the third ticket is, we split three ways.
Yeah.
Then everyone's paying for one third of a ticket.
That I think that is the way to do it. That is the absolute way to do
it. But I'm not paying one third of $300 to go to an event. No. I can probably con my way into going to for free.
Yeah, that's the conning of the way to go to for free. I just, oh God, it was so close. It just, and it's it sucks. I don't want to say this sucks because I don't want to sound grateful that we got the tickets, but it does put a bit of a damper on that we got two because they're such good seats. I've never sat this close for wrestling, and I've always wanted to sit on the floor and or in the 100s this close. I've been to Rico, and Rico, anywhere you sit is great. Like, it's an awesome venue for wrestling. Like, actually so, so good. If this wasn't such a big show, that's clearly, like, the place you would want to put it, right? It's kind of like, hey, where would you want to see a concert in Toronto kind of thing? Like, you don't want to see a concert at Scotiabank. You want to see it at the Danforth. You want to see it now at History. But this is like at Scotiabank being this close. This is the dream. I've been to multiple wrestling events at Scotiabank and I've only sat in the 300s like a poor. And I'm so excited for this.
So that takeover you went to, I sat roughly where you're going to sit for Raw. And it was awesome. I also went to a random SmackDown once with a friend. And so I don't know if you know this, but usually after the show is done, there's one more match or segment to like send the crowd home happy. So like, if Raw ends with the bad guy standing tall, something happens after the show goes off the air to make the kids happy, make the families happy. But a lot of the arena clears out, so you could just move up. So I watched like the one untelevised match from like the front row at that SmackDown. It was amazing. Kevin Owens like throwing guys like right into my lap, basically.
Yeah. And you, him looking at you, going like, through a guy in your lap so that he could see himself up close. Yeah, honestly, did you guys remember, do you remember that movie Dave? It's about the president, and he goes missing, and they just replace him with a guy who looks exactly like him. That's what's going to happen on Monday Night Raw with Blake if something ever happens to Kevin Owens. All right, so I think that's the good strategy. Blake sent me a message last night while I was at the game. While I was in just a full depression. Like, honestly, last night this is about as bad as I've ever felt at a baseball game, like, other than non-playoffs, because playoffs, I've been to losses. Like, I was there when they got eliminated in 2016, and you just sit there like, wow, all this season is done and over. And 2016, when they got eliminated, you knew that Jose Bautista and Edwin were maybe done, that that was the last time you were going to see them in a Blue Jays uniform. It was just very uncertain, and it was a really disheartening way to go out, too, if you remember. Like, it was shaking in their boots, and they just weren't the same. And that bullpen would come in and completely shut things down.
We don't need to go this far down the path on another bad, disappointing Jays team.
Well, that's the thing is, but that's the thing is, last night, that's how it felt, where there was real optimism in the stadium when they were up 2-0 and the game started the way that it did, which was, okay, you know, maybe things aren't going to be the worst. And then when Matt Chapman hit into that double play, the mood in the stadium shifted. And then by the end of it, when the Jays went down 4-2 after Bass gave up that run, I kind of just sat there and stared off into space for an inning, and it actually made me lose count of the game, because when the game was over, I actually thought it was the bottom of the eighth, and then everyone started pouring out, and I was like, oh, the game's over. Whoops. I've zoned out basically for an entire inning of just depression.
That's called an emotional mercy rule, JD.
Yeah, it was
blackout innings.
Yeah, I just stared forward, and I wasn't involved in the conversation with the group I was in. I was just staring forward, thinking about this baseball team and what we were going to do on the show tomorrow. But the one good piece of news I got is that Blake Murphy informed me that my dream could come true.
Yes. So, Major League Baseball announced yesterday that in order to expand and diversify the pool of umpire candidates, they will now provide quality and consistent training at no cost to participants. They will also expedite outlier performers up the chain. So if your performance demands it, you can move up higher. So free to go to the camp, free to get developed. I'd imagine there's a cutoff of like, if you're not X amount good, we're not paying for your training anymore. But there's a baseline of, hey, stay in the system, we'll give you all this training for free. The next one, JD, I think you're probably off August 26th, given what that day is. But Saturday, August 27th in Brooklyn.
I'm in Montreal.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. So maybe I'll have to miss this round. I'll tell you this. If I joined that umpire group, I'd be part of the expedited class. And I believe this. I'm not joking. I would be expedited class. There's no way. How hard is it? Oh, strike? Oh, was it in the strike zone? Yeah, strike. Was it outside the strike zone? Yeah. Here's what you have to do to be an umpire. Be not 100 years old. Don't be petty where you want to make the calls go against the batters you don't like or that quote-unquote show you up. And three is just pay attention. Boom. Good. The job is there. That's theirs for your taking. I'm ready to become the best umpire the game's ever seen. I truly believe in my heart of hearts that I don't need – like, I think it's hard to become an NHL referee. I think it's hard to become – NBA ref I could do tomorrow. I could honestly do that tomorrow. I could step in and be an NBA ref tomorrow. But because again, NBA ref is just like, hey, are we calling fouls tonight or not? Like, how are we calling this game? Easy peasy. I could do NBA refing tomorrow. NFL, impossible. Unbelievably hard job. Although you do only have one responsibility at a time, which is all right. MLB umpire, NBA ref. I'm among the game's best within 24 hours.
This comes at a good time because last night, another umpire mistake where he called, he missed another ball. And like 1 week ago, the guy gave him four strikes. So there's clearly a need for JD Bunkus to infiltrate the umpire world. So I think we should find a way to go fund you. to get down there.
I'm ready. I would be dominant. Again, the only problem with me becoming an umpire is they say the umpire shouldn't become the show. People shouldn't know who the umpire is, but people would know who I am because mm-hmm. I'd be so good that they, you know, I would become the show. They'd go, look at the accuracy of this guy. We got to show you his scorecards every night. They're just incredible. Okay, so the Blue Jays. By the way, the Baltimore Orioles, I believe, are still the most profitable team in baseball this year. Mm-hmm. That's because they continue to be underdogs, like big underdogs, against teams that are not deserving to have big discrepancies in the line against them. Yesterday, the Blue Jays, I believe, were like minus 250 as they were minus 110 on the run line. Tonight, the Blue Jays, minus 177 favorites on Unibet, plus 115 for the minus 1.5 run line, and the total is at 9. No further comment.
Yeah. Tell you this much. If they win and hit the over, we got to explore doing Jays Talk Plus from Rogers Center every single time. The last two games, by the way, absolute disaster with Ben Ennis doing fan drive time from Rogers Center. Mm-hmm. If they come through today with Jays Talk Plus emanating from Rogers Center, we might have to rethink the schedule on the radio for the next home series.
Is the time of Jays Talk Plus different today?
Yeah, 2 to 3 and then post game.
Mm. Good stuff.
God. What are those calls / texts going to look like if they get swept by Baltimore and they fall out of the wild card spot?
I won't be looking at them if it's another game as bad as that. I'll just ramble for the entire post game, or I'll make them up.
It's tough. It's tough.
I don't know from a betting standpoint. I think the Jays are, like, if you're a Jays fan, you can't touch them right now from a betting standpoint because it's just, I don't know. It's painful enough as it is.
Yeah, I as somebody who lost money on them yesterday and watched them lose, and had a gut full of hot dogs, it was not a good experience. If I'm writing a blog post on this, is a review, a Yelp, that's what I was looking for. The Yelp review on going to the Blue Jays right now, low. 1 star. Like, no fun. I can't wait to listen to your show today, Blake, because I can't hear, I can't wait to hear, you know, what your theories are on this offense and kind of what's happening right now. But yeah, it's a complete stay away from me tonight from a betting standpoint. I'm moving on to other games. Ailish, anything you like? You always usually bet on these games. No, you're out too.
Bye bye. I'm not betting on this game whatsoever. I just I'll give you my wake and rake after I read this one text message. Just catching up, but dunking your $1 hot dog in a cup of beer is 100 times more garbage than sliced hot dogs in Kraft Dinner. Agree.
Incorrect.
Now moving on to my best bet, which is in the World Juniors. Canada in the quarterfinals today against Switzerland. Just going to be an easy win for them. The last time they played Switzerland, I believe it was like a 12-0. So I'm just going to bet the over in Canada-Switzerland, which is over 7.5. I'm also intrigued by the puck line, which is 5.5. But I'm just gonna hit the game over -130.
5.5.
Yeah. You can't even bet the money line on these guys because it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the bet?
I'm going to do Canada, Switzerland over 7.5 -130.
Over 7.5. Okay.
There's just their offense is the best in the tournament. Mason McTavish to get 2 goals is like +100. Like, this guy is going to score 5.
Mason McTavish, lighting the world on fire right now. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to watch some of these Canada games against the lesser light countries from a hockey standpoint. It's never intrigued me too much. It is always whenever you're betting on these games, you're betting on them to score.
The good thing is it's a 7 o'clock game, so you can just roll right in from Blue Jays into watching Canada roll over Switzerland.
I know. It always feels so weird when you bet on these games and you bet on a team to win by 6 goals and you're like, yes, they did it. Break those teenagers' hearts from the country that doesn't have nearly the same resources as us. I'm going back to baseball. My computer is frozen, so we're waiting for my line. I don't have the line, so someone's going to have
we'll
to read
it to
me. All I have is the probable pitchers in front of me. I'm going with the under in the first 5 with Pablo Lopez and Mike Clevinger. Padres' offense has obviously been much better as of late. I think in the last month, like, they've actually been dominating its right-handed pitching, but these are two guys I trust. I'm going back to the well of tried, tested, and true, which is, fading the Marlins in the first 5 innings and backing their pitching staff. So that's where I'm going tonight.
Similar pick here. The under 4.5 in Cleveland, Detroit. Detroit offense is just unspeakably bad. Worst in baseball by a long shot. Daniel Norris is on the hill, so it's not great on the other side. But the Guardians have really struggled against lefties. Second worst offense in baseball. So I wouldn't do it at 3.5, but under 4.5, mm-hmm. Cleveland, Detroit. Feels like a good one.
Okay, just to recap, I'm doing the over 7.5 in the Switzerland-Canada game. JD was under 3.5 in the first five in the Padres and Marlins, right? Mm-hmm. And then Blake under 4.5 in the first five in the Tigers and Guardians.
Under 4.5 is the line? Can you tease that? Okay, nice.
No, that's the line. No,
that's the line in the Blake.
Minus 129.
I'm frozen.
Ooh, I have minus 137. Yikes.
Okay.
It
moves a little bit.
Anyway, all together, also, plus 482, so still great value.
Yeah. Also, if, I don't know, little in-game bet idea, Juan Soto has crushed Pablo Lopez in the past, so if it gets through five with the under, maybe hit an in-game because Soto has been a monster, obviously, since he got to San Diego.
That hurts my feelings. That's the Wake and Rake for today, August 17th. I'm off tomorrow. I'm off Friday, so Ailish has you covered. I need a break from these Toronto Blue Jays. They have broken my soul. I'll catch you next week. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, and Ailish. 4-7-5-9 The Fan.